A Werewolf Shifter romance audiobook written by Catherine Stewart. Prologue. The blight crept closer, a slow rot poisoning the ancient soil of Shadowfen. From his throne of cold stone, King Alaric felt the sickness, a mirror of his dying kingdom in his own bones. His line had ruled for centuries with brute strength, but strength could not halt this decay. Not this. Only the prophecy offered hope, an ancient, maddening riddle. It spoke of a human Luna, one blind to his world. Her fated arrival would unleash their line's dormant power, purify the land. She was their salvation. But for a king who had only ever known control, she was his greatest vulnerability, a bond he could not command, a weakness he could not afford. Tonight, the air was different. A strange energy thrummed at the edge of his senses, a faint, inexplicable pull from the world beyond the forest. The prophecy was no longer a myth on a scroll. It was a promise or a threat, and it was drawing closer. He could feel her, and every primal instinct screamed. His ruin and his redemption was about to begin. Chapter 1. The cursor blinked, a tiny rhythmic heartbeat on the massive graphic design file that was due in the morning. Outside, the city hummed its endless, lonely song, but in here? In here, there was only the low whir of her computer and the scent of stale coffee. Sarah's world was a fortress built of control. Each pixel on the screen, each bill paid on time, a brick in the wall against the chaos she feared. Because if she just worked hard enough, maybe she could keep it all at bay. And then, a sound shattered the quiet. A cough. It wasn't a normal cough. It was a thin, ragged thing that clawed its way out of the next room. Her heart skipped. Willow. Without thinking, her body moved on instinct, the half-finished design completely forgotten. She pushed her chair back, the scrape of its legs loud in the sudden silence. In the dim light of the hallway, she saw her little sister, Willow, curled in her bed, her small frame shaking with another hacking cough. Her face, usually so pale, was flushed with a feverish heat. "Hey, sweetie," Sarah whispered, her voice a soft balm. She knelt by the bed, her hand cool on Willow's forehead. "Just a little tickle. We've got this, remember?" Willow nodded, her big, trusting eyes swimming with tears. Moments later, Sarah measured out the bitter-smelling medicine with practiced ease, her hands steady even as her insides churned. She held the spoon to Willow's lips, murmuring nonsense until the last drop was gone. As she settled the blankets around her sister, her fingers brushed against the tarnished silver locket at her own throat. It had been their mother's. A beat later, a faint, inexplicable warmth bloomed from the metal against her skin. Strange. She'd never felt that before. She dismissed it as a trick of the light, a phantom of her exhaustion. Deep down, she knew the truth. She couldn't afford distractions, not when the only thing that mattered was the steady, precious rhythm of her sister's breathing. And just like that, everything changed when she realized the warmth wasn't fading, but holding steady, a tiny secret ember against the cold fear in her chest. Chapter 2. The experimental treatment is an option. The doctor's words were a clinical sledgehammer delivered under the cold, buzzing lights of his office. An option. An astronomically expensive, last-ditch option located in some remote clinic she'd never even heard of, which meant it wasn't an option at all. Back in their tiny apartment, the doctor's sterile pronouncement echoed in the silence, mingling with the scent of dust and desperation. Hopelessness was a physical weight, pressing down on her chest, stealing her breath. She was surrounded by mountains of medical bills, each one a testament to her failure. No matter how hard she tried, it was never enough. Because of that, she felt the walls of her carefully controlled world begin to crumble. What's worse, her savings were gone, utterly depleted. So, she did the only thing she could. She searched. For hours, she fell down a rabbit hole of forgotten forums and dubious miracle cures, her fingers flying across the keyboard. Nothing. Just nothing. Eventually, defeated, She pulled out an old family photo album, the worn leather cool beneath her fingertips. Maybe it was fate, or maybe just dumb luck. But as she opened it, a folded piece of paper slipped from between two pages. It wasn't a photograph. It was a map. Old, brittle, and hand-drawn, showing an isolated, unnamed town nestled against a dense, uncharted forest. And right in the heart of that forest was a faint, hand-drawn symbol, a shape that perfectly matched her locket. Her breath caught. Tucked behind the map was a smaller, even older piece of paper, a journal entry. Her grandmother's shaky handwriting filled the page. "There are ancient cures in forgotten lands," it read, "where the world is older, wilder. Some families are tied to that wildness. Our family." It was insane, completely and utterly insane. And yet, as her fingers traced the symbol on the map, she felt it, clear as day. An inexplicable, almost magnetic pull toward that empty spot on the page. A sense of wrongness that she couldn't explain, but felt compelled to investigate. She didn't know what scared her more, the madness of believing or the despair of not having any other choice. Chapter 3. The rumble of her beat-up car was a steady companion, eating up the miles that separated her from everything she knew. The city, with its noise and its concrete and its suffocating medical bills, was a bad memory in her rearview mirror. Before her, the world grew greener, wilder. Truth be told, a part of her felt like she was going crazy. Chasing a ghost on a hand-drawn map because of a cryptic note from her long-dead grandmother? It was the definition of irrational. Yet, the strange pull she'd felt in her apartment was stronger out here on the open road. It was a low hum beneath her skin, a compass needle in her soul pointing her north, deeper into the wilderness. About an hour into the drive, something inside her shifted. A wave of dizziness washed over her so suddenly she had to grip the steering wheel to keep the car straight. The world tilted on its axis for a terrifying second, then righted itself. She blinked, her heart pounding. Stress, she told herself. Lack of sleep, that's all. But then it happened again. This time it was a flash of heat, a bloom of fire beneath her skin, followed by a sudden bone-deep chill. She shivered, cranking up the heat even though the sun was bright. And her senses, they felt wrong. The scent of pine from the trees lining the road wasn't just a scent. It was a sharp, vivid perfume she could almost taste. She could hear the rustle of leaves in the forest, a sound no human should discern over the roar of an engine. The rational part of her brain was screaming. But another, deeper part of her. It wasn't scared. It was waking up. As the sun began to dip below the horizon, the road ended, abruptly. It just stopped, giving way to a solid wall of ancient, imposing forest. The trees were massive, their branches woven together like a dark canopy, swallowing the last of the light. As if pulled by a string, she put the car in park, the engine idling. In that moment, an overwhelming, raw power hit her, pressing in on the car from all sides. It was ancient and wild and terrifyingly alive. Her breath caught, her lungs seizing. Without warning, shadows detached themselves from the trees. Figures. Tall, powerful figures, moving with an unnatural, predatory grace. They emerged from the gloom, surrounding her vehicle, their forms silhouetted against the dying light. Environment thickened. The silence roared, and the space between them burned with a silent, terrifying question. Her world tilted, and she knew, with a certainty that froze the blood in her veins, that she had made a terrible, terrible mistake. And just like that, everything changed. Chapter 4. Before she could even scream, her car door was wrenched open with a groan of tortured metal. A massive hand shot in, clamping around her arm like a vice. The strength was unnatural, terrifying. Her cry died in her throat. Without a word, she was pulled from the car and into the cold night air. The scent of pine and damp earth filled her lungs, mixed with something else, something wild and musky. Rough hands bound her wrists behind her back, the rope biting into her skin. "What do you want?" she gasped, her voice trembling. "I don't have any money." Her pleas were met with a chilling silence. Instead, one of the figures lifted her as if she weighed nothing. What followed was a dizzying, terrifying journey through the forest. The trees were a blur of black and gray, the ground rushing by beneath her. No matter how hard she tried, she couldn't break free. The grip was like iron. Eventually, towering stone walls rose from the darkness. A castle. An ancient, impossible castle hidden from the world. She was carried inside, through massive wooden doors, and down a long, torchlit hall. Space grew heavy, thick with the smell of wood smoke and power. Her heart pounded against her ribs, a frantic drum in the echoing silence. They threw her to her knees on a cold, hard stone floor. Her head snapped up, and she saw him. He was on a throne carved from a single massive piece of dark wood, a king from a forgotten age. His face was all harsh lines and brutal beauty, his dark hair falling over a furrowed brow. But his eyes were the color of molten gold, and they burned into her with a predatory intensity that stole the air from her lungs. The moment their eyes locked, a searing heat erupted on her wrist. It was an agony so sharp, so sudden, it made her cry out. Across the room, the king flinched, his own hand flying to his wrist as his eyes widened in shock. A low, guttural sound tore from his throat, not a word, but a deep, rumbling growl that vibrated through the very stones beneath her. It was a sound of pure, untamed possession. In that moment, an older man with silver-streaked hair stepped forward from the shadows, his voice grave. "She is the one, my king," he announced to the stunned room. "The fated human Luna, foretold to unleash the full power of the Shadowfen line." Chapter 5. The scent hit him first. Before he even truly saw her, her scent slammed into him, a dizzying mix of rain-soaked earth, fragile human courage, and something else. Something that spoke directly to the ancient, slumbering beast within him. "Mate." The word was a roar in his soul, a primal clawing for control that buckled his knees. For a century, he had been nothing but a king, cold, controlled, empty. And just like that, everything changed. The moment their eyes locked, the bond ignited. It wasn't a gentle warmth. It was a brand of pure fire searing itself into his flesh, into his very being. The pain was a distant echo to the overwhelming, possessive fury of his wolf. "Mine!" it howled, demanding he cross the floor, sink his teeth into her soft skin, and claim what fate had decreed was his. He gripped the arms of his throne, his knuckles white, the wood groaning under the strain. He could not lose control. Not now. Then, her voice, a furious, disbelieving cry. "Luna? Fated mate? I'm human. This is insane." Her denial was a splash of icy water, giving him the focus he needed. He rose from his throne, forcing his legs to move with a steady, deliberate pace. Each step was a war. He felt the eyes of his high council on him, felt the weight of his dying kingdom. He needed the prophecy. He needed her. But he could not show her the ravenous beast she had awakened. "You are here because fate demands it," he said, his voice a low, cold command. He deliberately left out the word, mate. He had to, because the word itself felt like a surrender. "My pack, our very existence, depends on a prophecy that involves you." He saw the fear in her eyes, but more importantly, he saw the fire, the defiance. She wasn't broken. She was magnificent. She was a queen, even on her knees. Without warning, she scrambled to her feet and tried to flee. Her body moved on instinct, but his beta, Kyle, and another warrior were faster. They blocked her path effortlessly. The sight of her, trapped and defiant, sent another jolt of pure possession through him, which meant he had to keep her close, not just to fulfill the prophecy, but to protect her from every other male in this castle, who could now scent the unclaimed mate of their king. Chapter 6. The man, the king, had her taken from the throne room. Two silent, hulking warriors escorted her down one hall, then another, their steps silent on the cold stone. She didn't fight. What was the point? She was in a castle full of monsters, a prisoner in a nightmare she couldn't wake up from. They led her to a room with a heavy oak door. Inside, her breath caught. The room was beautiful, larger than her entire apartment. A massive bed was draped in dark green silks. A fire crackled in a stone hearth, and a plate of food sat waiting on a small table. A gilded cage. Truth be told, the luxury only made her feel more trapped. A woman was waiting for her inside. She was tall and severe, with sharp features and hair the color of autumn leaves pulled back in a tight braid. Her eyes missed nothing. "I am Rowan, the king's second," she said, her voice crisp and formal, with no trace of warmth. "Your bindings will be removed. You will not be harmed, but you will not leave this room without an escort." "I want to go home," Sarah said, her own voice sounding weak and thin. "My sister. She's sick. She needs me." Rowan's expression didn't soften. "Your sister is a world away. Here you have a new purpose. Your safety is now paramount because the safety of this pack depends on you." She gestured to the window, where the moonlight streamed in. "Our lands are dying. A blight spreads, weakening us day by day. The prophecy states that only when the fated Luna is bound to our king will the land heal." A tool, that's all she was to them. A key to fix their magical problems. The realization was a cold stone in her gut. She had to escape. For Willow. As Rowan turned to leave, Sarah's desperation surged. "This is crazy. You can't just keep me here." Rowan paused at the door. "We can. And we will." Soon, the door clicked shut, the heavy sound of a lock sliding into place echoing in the room. To make things worse, when she rushed to the window, her fingers found no latch, no handle. The glass was smooth, seamless, and magically sealed. She was truly trapped. That night, as she lay in the strange, silky bed, a low sound drifted up from the castle depths. It was a deep, guttural growl, full of longing and a terrifying, possessive hunger. And she felt it, clear as day. It was him, the king. A constant, possessive presence, even when she couldn't see him. Chapter 7. Days bled into one another in a haze of silk sheets and silent guards. Her room was a luxurious prison, and she spent her time pacing its length, memorizing every detail, every shadow, searching for a weakness that wasn't there. She was a bird in a gilded cage, and she was beginning to forget the feel of the sky. That night, Rowan came for her. "The king requests your presence for dinner." It wasn't a request, it was a command. Soon after, she was led to a smaller dining hall, one clearly meant for private meals. A fire roared in a massive hearth, casting dancing shadows on the stone walls. And at the head of a long, dark wood table, he sat. The king. Alaric. Without a word, he gestured to the seat opposite him. The silence stretched as she sat, thick and heavy, broken only by the clinking of silverware as servants placed plates of steaming, delicious-smelling food in front of them. Food she couldn't bring herself to eat. Because of that, all she could focus on was him. He didn't speak, but his eyes, those intense, golden eyes, never left her. Under the weight of his stare, her skin grew hot, and a low, unsettling hum started deep in her bones. It was a strange vibration, a current of energy that seemed to connect the two of them across the table. She noticed, too, how the servants moved. They were careful, so careful, to never look at her directly. Their eyes were always downcast when they were near. It was as if looking at her was forbidden, as if she belonged to him, and even a glance was a trespass. The thought sent a terrifying, unwanted thrill through her. Later that night, back in her room, she couldn't sleep. Her thoughts spun. She touched the strange, swirling mark on her wrist that had appeared in the throne room. It was cool to the touch now. As her fingers traced the pattern, a wave of profound, aching loneliness washed over her. It was so sharp, so deep, it made her chest ache. But in the quiet that followed, she knew the truth. The feeling wasn't hers. Chapter 8. Come morning, Rowan began her education. To survive here, you must understand us, Rowan stated, her voice flat. She explained the pack hierarchy, the Alpha King, his Beta, the Council, the Warriors. She spoke of their strength, their speed, their loyalty. It was a crash course in a world Sarah still couldn't believe was real. More importantly, Rowan insisted on physical training. You are human, she said, not unkindly, which means you are fragile. You must learn to defend yourself. At first, Sarah was clumsy, her movements awkward. Yet, as the days passed, something shifted. Her body moved on instinct, her reflexes sharper than they had any right to be. She managed to block a move from Rowan, surprising them both. You learn quickly, Rowan noted, a flicker of something like respect in her eyes. During one particularly hard session, Sarah's foot slipped on the training yard's packed earth. She went down hard, her hands scraping against the rough ground. A sharp sting blossomed in her left palm. Careful, Rowan chided, kneeling beside her. She took Sarah's hand to inspect the damage. It was a nasty scrape, beaded with blood, the skin raw and angry. Rowan reached for a small pouch of herbs at her belt. But before she could move, Sarah stared at her own hand. A strange focus narrowed her vision. She felt a faint tingling, a warmth that had nothing to do with the injury. She just willed it to be better, for the pain to go away. As if summoned, the bleeding slowed. Then it stopped completely. Between one breath and the next, the angry red edges of the wound seemed to soften, to pull together at a speed that was impossible, unnatural. Rowan's breath hitched. Her eyes widened, staring at Sarah's palm. What was that? Sarah stared at her own hand, her thoughts spinning. Her heart pounded in her chest. She had no idea. From a shadowed alcove high above the training yard, Alaric watched, his knuckles white where he gripped the stone railing. He had seen it too. A power he hadn't anticipated. A magic that wasn't supposed to be part of the prophecy. And just like that, everything he thought he knew about his fated mate was wrong. Chapter 9. Scent in the council room was thick with tension, so thick he could taste it. Kaelin, the alpha of the Blood Moon Pack, sat across from him, a lazy, arrogant smirk playing on his lips. His pack bordered Alaric's eastern territories, and he was a constant thorn in his side, always pushing, always testing. The blight weakens your patrols, Alaric, Kaelin purred, leaning forward. My hunters report your borders are porous. Perhaps you need help managing them. It was an offer wrapped in a threat. Alaric kept his face a mask of cold indifference, but his wolf paced restlessly beneath his skin. This meeting was a waste of time. Kaelin was a jackal, circling, sniffing for weakness. Then Kaelin's gaze shifted. His smirk widened. Alaric's head snapped towards the door, where Sarah stood beside Rowan. She had been brought in to observe, to understand the politics of her new world. But he saw it now. It was a mistake. Bringing her here was like bringing a lone, perfect flame into a room full of gunpowder. With his scent in the air, Kaelin's eyes lit up with a greedy, appraising light. Well, well. And who is this lovely creature you've been hiding away, King? He spoke to Alaric, but his eyes devoured Sarah, a clear, insolent challenge. You must introduce us. The space between them burned. A red haze descended over Alaric's vision. The king in him, the diplomat, the ruler. It all vanished. Something older, something far more feral, took its place. Before either could speak, a sound ripped from Alaric's chest. It was not a word. It was a growl. A low, guttural rumble of pure, absolute possession that vibrated through the floor and silenced every breath in the room. The tension broke. Kaelin's smirk vanished, replaced by a flash of genuine fear. His wolf had recognized the warning from a superior predator. As if pulled by a string, Alaric was on his feet. He crossed the room in two long strides, his entire being focused on one thing, her. He pulled her behind him, his hand landing on the small of her back, a searing brand of ownership, a silent declaration. Mine. Beneath the weight of his stare, he saw her shiver, her pulse racing. She was afraid, but he also smelled her confusion and a faint, traitorous flicker of arousal. The knowledge was a heady rush, a dark promise that coiled deep in his gut.
Chapter 10. The reports were getting worse. The blight, that creeping sickness in their soil, was no longer just a distant threat. It was a poison seeping into their core. Warriors on patrol were falling ill, their strength sapped by the corrupted earth. The scent of decay hung heavy in the air, a constant reminder of his failure as king. In the council hall, the mood was grim. He felt the weight of 100 worried stares, but one gaze was sharper than the rest. His cousin Gideon. Gideon rose, his voice smooth as polished stone yet sharp as glass. "My king," he began, a picture of false concern. "We are bleeding resources. Our warriors are stretched thin, and still, we house a human, a frailty." His words, slick with poison, slithered into the minds of the council members. Alaric could see the doubt taking root. "The prophecy speaks of a Luna," Gideon continued, his voice resonating with false logic. "A powerful being to stand beside our king. What we have is a frightened girl who knows nothing of our ways. Is this human truly our salvation? Or is she a drain on a kingdom already on its knees, a distraction we cannot afford?" Deep down, he knew the truth. Gideon was using logic as a weapon, twisting their fears to serve his own ambition. Alaric's wolf snarled beneath his skin, demanding to be let out, demanding to silence the challenge. But a king could not rule with his teeth alone. "Sarah's place here is mandated by fate," Alaric stated, his voice a low growl that left no room for argument. "Her safety is the safety of this pack. That is final." The council ended, but the tension remained, a bitter taste in surrounding. Later that day, from his study window, he saw her. Sarah. She was in the castle gardens, her hand outstretched towards a blackened, blighted rosebush. As he watched, she swayed, her face pale. She pressed a hand to her head, a grimace of pure agony twisting her features before she stumbled back, away from the dead plant. Because of that, he felt a strange pang in his chest. It wasn't just the possessiveness of the bond. To make things worse, it was something else. Concern. A feeling he had long ago buried.
Chapter 11. That night, the sky broke open. Thunder rattled the ancient stones of the castle, each boom a physical blow that sent a tremor of pure panic through her. It was a childish fear, born from another storm, another night, long ago, when she had lost everything, the night her parents died. Her heart pounded. The walls of her room felt like they were closing in. She had to get out. She had to move. Without thinking, she fled, her bare feet silent on the cold floors. She took one turn, then another, her only goal to escape the sound, to escape the memory. Soon after, she found herself in a part of the castle she'd never seen, before a set of tall, dark wood doors. One was slightly ajar. Drawn by the silence within, she pushed it open and slipped inside. It was a study. Maps and ancient scrolls were spread across a massive table. And there, under the light of a single candle, stood Alaric. He felt her before he saw her. A wave of pure, unadulterated terror washed over him through the bond, so sharp and powerful it made him straighten up from the maps of his failing kingdom. It was her fear. Again, the world outside exploded. A deafening crack of thunder shook the castle to its foundations. A small choked cry echoed from the doorway. His head snapped up. Sarah stood there, pale and trembling, her eyes wide with a terror that had nothing to do with him. She looked broken, small. In the span of a breath, the king vanished. The wolf took over. His body moved on instinct, crossing the room in three long strides. Before either could speak, he had her in his arms, pulling her tight against his chest, shielding her from the storm, from the memories, from everything. At first, she was stiff with shock. But then, as another rumble shook the earth, she sagged against him. A shudder racked her small frame. And through the bond, he felt it all. A tidal wave of her grief, the ghost of an old, deep loss. And she, in turn, felt his. The crushing weight of his crown, the cold, bitter ache of his isolation, the profound weariness of a king watching his world die. For a long moment, they just stood there, not a king and his fated mate, just two souls clinging to each other in the dark. The space between them burned, not with passion, but with a raw, shared vulnerability. Then he pulled back, his control snapping back into place. His eyes blazed, a war of desire and duty raging within them. He turned away from her without another word, leaving her alone in the sudden, aching silence. Chapter 12. In the quiet that followed the storm, the castle felt different. Something between her and Alaric had cracked open, leaving a strange, vibrating tension in its wake. She didn't see him the next day, but she felt him, a constant, brooding presence at the edge of her senses. She was walking through a less used hall when a voice cut through the air. "The human stray." Sarah froze. It was Gideon. He stepped out from an archway, his smile predatory. He wasn't alone. Two other large warriors flanked him. "Tell me," Gideon said, circling her slowly. "Does our king's protection make you feel safe? Or does it just remind you that you are a cage bird, here to sing a song no one believes in?" Her heart hammered against her ribs. "I don't know what you're talking about." "Don't you?" he purred. "You are a weakness this pack cannot afford, a fantasy. And fantasies have a way of ending, badly." Before she could move, a low growl echoed down the hall, a sound that made the very air tremble. "Gideon." Alaric was there. He appeared as if from the shadows, his golden eyes blazing with a fury so intense it was a physical force. With every step he took, the atmosphere thickened. "She is the Luna of this pack." Alaric's voice was a blade of ice. "She is under my protection. You will address her with respect, or you will address me on the challenge field. Is that understood?" Gideon's arrogant smirk vanished. For the first time, she saw fear in his eyes. He gave a stiff, formal bow. "Of course, my king." Then he and his warriors were gone. Sarah's thoughts spun. He had defended her, not as a tool for a prophecy, but as his Luna. Later that day, a hidden text message came through on the phone she'd kept secret. It was from the nurse she paid to check in on Willow. "Condition worsening. Doctors are concerned. She's asking for you." The words were a dagger in her heart. Willow. Her desperation became a physical ache. That night, she snuck out to the gardens, to the same blighted rosebush. She had to try. She had to control this strange power. Focusing on the image of Willow's face, she pushed, pouring all her will, all her fear, all her love into the dead plant. The world went white with pain. A fire exploded behind her eyes, and she knew no more. Chapter 13. She woke up with the metallic taste of blood in her mouth and the concerned face of Rowan swimming into focus. The memory of the pain, of the world going white, was still a phantom ache behind her eyes. But something else was there too. A cold, hard resolve. The memory of Alaric's voice defending her. The text message about Willow. "I'm done being fragile," Sarah said, her voice raspy but firm as she sat up. "The prophecy says I have power. I want to learn how to use it. Properly." Rowan's eyes widened slightly, a flicker of surprise crossing her severe features. She gave a single, sharp nod. After that, the training changed. It was no longer just about defense. It was about endurance, about focus. Sarah learned to feel the power inside her, not as a terrifying stranger, but as a part of her. She learned to draw it, to shape it, and more importantly, to ground herself against the debilitating backlash, With every passing day, she grew stronger, more confident. The fear was still there, but now it was fuel. During one session, she was trying to create a shield of pure energy. Alaric was there, watching from the edge of the training yard, his presence a constant, heavy weight. She pushed harder, pouring her frustration and her desperate hope into the shield. Without warning, something inside her snapped. The shield didn't just flare outward, it flared inward, directly towards him. In the span of a breath, their minds connected. It wasn't just a feeling of loneliness this time. It was images, emotions, memories. She saw a flash of two fresh graves in a snow-covered clearing and felt a wave of soul-crushing grief that was 100 years old. Her world tilted. He stumbled back a step, his golden eyes wide with shock. She knew he had seen something of hers in return, her own deepest fear. The night of the car crash, the rain, the loss of her parents, the connection broke as quickly as it formed, leaving them both breathing heavily, shaken. That night, he found her in the library, pushing herself to study the pack's history. "You need to rest," he murmured, his voice rough. Before she could protest, he was there, gently taking a heavy book from her tired hands. Their fingers brushed. As fire bloomed beneath her skin, the mate mark on her wrist pulsed with a comforting, undeniable warmth. He snatched his hand back as if burned, his eyes dark with a raw, unmasked desire. Chapter 14. He had been avoiding her. Ever since their minds had touched, avoiding her was like trying to ignore the beat of his own heart. The glimpse he'd had into her soul, her loss, her strength, it had shattered the last of his cold defenses. She wasn't just a prophecy. She was Sarah. She found him in the armory, the scent of her determination cutting through the smell of steel and oil. "Why do you keep doing that?" she demanded, her voice trembling with a frustration that matched his own. "You get close, then you run. Why?" He turned, the weight of his unspoken feelings a physical burden. "You do not want me to get close, human." "Stop calling me that," she shot back, stepping closer, her fists clenched. "I have a name, and I'm not the one who held me in the middle of a storm like I was the only thing keeping you from falling apart." The space between them burned. Her words were a direct hit, stripping away his control. He moved before he could think, his body acting on pure, primal instinct. He backed her against the cold stone wall, his hands slamming against it on either side of her head, caging her in. Her breath hitched. "Do you truly not feel it, Sarah?" he snarled, his voice a low, husky thing. When her name left his lips, something between them cracked. "This pull? This madness that screams at me every time you are near? It threatens to consume me, to burn away the king and leave only the beast." Under the weight of his stare, her fear was mixed with a dawning, dangerous curiosity. He could smell it. He leaned in, his own pulse roaring in his ears. Her scent was everything. His lips brushed against hers, a feather-light touch that sent a jolt of pure lightning through him. Time stood still. Just as he was about to capture her mouth, a voice echoed through the armory, magically amplified, chilling, and familiar. Kaelin's. "The fated Luna's ancestors cursed us, Lycan King. This human lineage sealed our magic away. We come to claim what is ours." As if fate demanded it, the promise of a kiss was replaced by the declaration of war. He pulled back, his face a grim mask. The ancient betrayal wasn't just a story. It was alive, and it was coming for them.
Chapter 15. The rival Alpha's words hung in the air, a poison that changed everything. Sarah's lineage wasn't just human. It was the key to an ancient curse, which meant her latent power was not just a surprise. It was a motive for their enemies. To make things worse, Kaelin didn't wait. Moments later, reports flooded in. The Blood Moon Raiders were launching skirmishes along their northern border, using the blight-weakened lands as a path of entry. They were testing their defenses, looking for a way in. There was no choice. He had to lead the warriors to the front. He had to push them back. As he donned his battle leathers, the thick hide settling over his shoulders like a familiar weight, Rowan approached, her face grim. She handed him a hastily scribbled note. "From a scout within the castle walls," she said, her voice low. The note was short and damning. "Gideon speaks openly now. He calls her the Curse Blood. He tells the pack members that her ancestors are the reason for our weakness, that she is not a cure, but the source of the disease. He suggests using her as bait to draw Kaelin into a trap." A growl rose in his throat. Betrayal. Not just from without, but from within. Gideon was using the chaos of the attacks to turn his own people against their Luna, against his mate. His ambition had become treason. With every heartbeat, his resolve hardened. He would crush Kaelin's forces on the border, and then he would return and deal with the snake in his own den. He had to, because Sarah's life depended on it. He strode out into the courtyard where his elite warriors and their massive warwolves waited. The air was cold, filled with the metallic scent of anticipation and bloodlust. As he swung himself onto the back of his own colossal black-furred wolf, his eyes scanned the castle ramparts. And he found her. She was watching from a high window, a small pale figure against the dark stone. Even from this distance, he felt her fear, her worry. With a single glance, he locked his eyes with hers, pouring all of his promise, all of his possessive fury into that one look. "I will return for you." Without another word, he gave the signal, and the ground thundered as they charged from the castle, a wave of gray and black fur racing toward the coming war. Chapter 16. The battle was chaos. Blood and mud. The Blood Moon Raiders didn't fight with honor. They used the Blight as a weapon, emerging from its sickly, coiling mists like phantoms. His warriors, the strongest in the land, were faltering, their lungs burning with the poison, their movements sluggish. "They're flanking us from the west," Kyle, his beta, roared over the din, his fur matted with black blood. "They knew our patrol route. They knew exactly where to strike." It was a trap. A well-laid, devastating trap. As he lunged, his claws tearing through the throat of a raider, another slammed into his side, a silver-tipped spear digging deep into his ribs. A fire of pure agony erupted in his body. He roared, a sound of fury and pain, and threw the attacker aside. But the damage was done. His strength was beginning to fade.
The castle was a tomb of anxious silence. Every distant shout, every gust of wind made her jump. She paced the length of her room, her thoughts a tangled mess of Alaric on the battlefield and Gideon's treacherous words. A young warrior, his face pale and streaked with grime, brought the news. "The losses are heavy, Luna. The Blood Moon pack was waiting. The Blight..." His voice trailed off, his eyes full of a horror he couldn't speak. A cold dread washed over her. And in that exact moment, her hidden phone vibrated with a weak buzz. Her hands trembled as she pulled it out. It was a message from Willow's nurse. "Her fever has spiked. She's not responding. The doctors are saying to prepare. She keeps asking for you, Sarah." The words blurred. Her breath caught. No, not Willow. Not now. Without warning, a sharp, searing pain ripped through her own side, so intense it stole her breath and sent her stumbling against the wall. She clutched her ribs, a strangled gasp escaping her lips. It wasn't her pain. She knew, with a terrifying certainty, it was his. Across all those miles, she felt the phantom agony of Alaric's wound as if it were her own. Her world tilted. The man she was tied to was dying on a battlefield, and the sister she lived for was dying in a hospital bed. And she was trapped between them, helpless. Chapter 17. She was still reeling, her body aching with a phantom pain that wasn't hers, when the door to her chamber opened. It wasn't a servant. It was Gideon, and he was smiling. "You look unwell, little bird," he purred, stepping inside. The two warriors with him were the same ones from the hall, his personal guard. "I suppose you've heard the news from the front? My cousin, the great king, is not faring so well." Sarah backed away, her heart hammering against her ribs. "What do you want?" "Want?" He laughed, a low, ugly sound. I already have it, or I will soon. You see, I knew Kaelin's pack would be waiting for them, because I told them where Alaric would be. Her blood ran cold. You betrayed him. Betrayal is such a strong word, Gideon mused, advancing on her. I prefer correction. Alaric was weak. He chose a human mate, a flaw in the bloodline. I am simply correcting his mistake. As he spoke, something caught her eye outside the window. Dark tendrils, black as tar, were crawling up the stone walls of her tower. The blight. It was no longer just in the soil. It was actively climbing the castle walls, reaching for her. I made a deal with Kaelin, Gideon continued, his eyes gleaming with triumph. I helped him weaken Alaric's forces. In return, when I take the throne, he gets a prize. He stopped just before her, his gaze dropping to the frantic pulse in her throat. He gets you. He's very interested in the magic of the curse bloodline. Before she could move, he lunged for her. But then, a blur of motion. Rowan stood between them, a silver dagger flashing in her hand. Her face was a mask of cold fury. You will not touch her, you traitorous dog, Rowan snarled. Gideon just smiled. I was hoping you'd say that. He and his warriors moved at once. The last thing Sarah saw was Rowan meeting their charge, her face grim with resolve. Run, child, Rowan screamed, her voice echoing in the chamber as the brutal fight began. Run, chapter 18. Her body moved on instinct. She ran. Down corridors she didn't recognize, her bare feet slapping against the cold stone, Rowan's scream chasing her. She could hear the fight behind her, the snarls, the clash of steel, the sickening thud of a body hitting the floor. Silence. A terrible final silence. Her thoughts spun. She stumbled through a half-open door and into a small, dark, forgotten chamber, collapsing against the far wall. The rough stone scraped her back, but she barely felt it. All she could feel was the bond. It was screaming, a thin wire of agony pulled taut across her soul. Soon it began to fade. The connection grew weaker and weaker until it was just a faint, thready pulse. Alaric. He was dying. Or maybe he was already gone. Her world tilted, and the last of her strength gave out. She slid down the wall to the floor, her body racked with silent, shuddering sobs. Willow was dying. Rowan was dead. Alaric was gone. Everyone she cared for, everyone she had a connection to, was being ripped away from her. Her deepest, most primal fear, the one she had run from her entire life, was happening all at once. She was alone, and she had failed to save any of them. This was her fault. Her pragmatic choice to come here, to chase a foolish hope on a map, had led to this. It had led to ruin. Despair was a physical weight, a black ocean that filled her lungs, drowning her. She curled into a ball on the cold floor, a single, hopeless tear tracing a path through the grime on her cheek. The silver locket at her throat, once a source of warmth and mystery, felt like a chip of ice against her skin. All was lost. But then, in the stillness that followed, she felt it. Faint. So faint, it was almost nothing. A tiny, fragile pulse from the mate mark on her wrist. A flicker of warmth against the encroaching cold. A heartbeat stubborn, defiant, and somehow still beating. Chapter 19. Despair was a black ocean, and she was drowning in it. But then, that pulse. A tiny, stubborn heartbeat from the mark on her wrist, a fragile thread of defiance in the suffocating darkness. He's alive. The thought was not a comfort. It was a command. It was a spark in the void. Slowly, shakily, she pushed herself up from the cold stone floor. Her body ached. Her magic was a hollow echo inside her. But that tiny pulse was an anchor. Her eyes scanned the small, hidden chamber she'd stumbled into. It wasn't just an empty room. In a recessed niche in the wall, almost hidden in the gloom, were ancient, crumbling scrolls. As if pulled by a string, she moved towards them. As she drew closer, the silver locket at her throat, which had been so cold, began to warm, a faint, gentle heat. She reached out a trembling hand and touched the cold stone beside the niche. Without warning, her own faint magic flared in response to the locket's warmth. Faint, glowing symbols, the same swirling pattern as her mate mark, blazed to life on the stone before her. A low grinding sound echoed in the small room as a section of the wall slid away, revealing a hidden passage. Inside, resting on a stone pedestal, was a single protected scroll. It looked far older than the others. Her fingers trembled as she unrolled it. The text was ancient, but somehow she could read it. It spoke of the prophecy, but a part she'd never heard. It didn't just speak of the Luna's power, but of a key. To break the ancient chains, she read, the Luna of the curse bloodline must make the willing sacrifice. Not of life, but of her heart's deepest fear. In the moment of the zenith, her surrender will unleash the true bond, her heart's deepest fear, the fear of loss, the terror of being alone, of being helpless to save the ones she loved, the very fear that had just tried to drown her. She had to let it go, willingly. In that moment, a fierce, almost painful hope cut through her despair. She was not a victim of fate. She was the key. And she knew what she had to do. Chapter 20. A new resolve burned in her veins, hot and sharp. There was no more time for fear or despair. There was only time to act. With every heartbeat, she felt the faint pulse of Alaric's life through the bond, a desperate, fading metronome counting down the moments he had left. She raced from the hidden chamber, moving through the shadowed corridors of the crumbling castle. Her senses, now honed by her training and fear, were on high alert. She could smell the location of Gideon's patrols before she saw them, ducking into alcoves and behind tapestries to avoid them. The castle itself seemed to groan around her, weakened by the encroaching blight. She heard it, a low groan of pain coming from a partially collapsed hallway. Her heart skipped. Rowan. She found her half buried under a pile of fallen stone and splintered wood, a deep gash on her forehead, her breathing shallow. But she was alive. Sarah? Rowan gasped, her eyes fluttering open. I'm here, Sarah whispered, trying to move the heavy debris. Rowan, what happened? Where is he? Gideon. Rowan coughed, a trickle of blood at her lips. He took the king, took him to the high altar at the heart of the castle. Her breath hitched. A ritual. Kaelin, the blood moon alpha. He means to drain the bond, to steal Alaric's power at the lunar zenith. It's almost time. Panic, cold and sharp, tried to claw its way back up Sarah's throat, but she forced it down. She had the key. She just needed the lock. How do I get there without being seen? Rowan's bloody fingers weakly pointed towards a large faded tapestry on the far wall, one depicting an ancient battle between wolves and shadow creatures. Hidden passage, behind the tapestry. It leads straight to the altar chamber. Go, child, you are his only hope, our only hope. Without another word, Sarah scrambled to the tapestry. She didn't know if she was racing towards her own death, but as she felt Alaric's life force flicker again, she knew she had no other choice. She had to try. Chapter 21. The secret passage was dark, narrow, and smelled of damp earth and old secrets. It twisted downwards, and soon she could hear them. The low, rhythmic chanting of a dark ritual. The space grew thick with a foul, corrupt energy. She emerged from behind a pillar into a vast, cavernous chamber, and her world tilted. In the center of the room, chained to a massive black stone altar, was Alaric. He was pale, his head hung low, streaks of blood staining the white of his torn shirt. The rival Alpha Kaelin stood before him, hands raised, his voice chanting in a guttural language that made her skin crawl. And guarding the scene, his face alight with triumph, was Gideon. A single beam of moonlight lanced down from a skylight high above, inching its way across the floor towards the altar. The lunar zenith. The time was now. The little bird has come to watch the eagle fall, Gideon taunted as he spotted her, drawing a wicked-looking silver sword. Her eyes scanned the chamber. There were no weapons for her, only darkness and stone. Her gaze landed on a heavy wrought iron sconce hanging from a nearby pillar. Her body moved on instinct. She ripped it from its mooring, the metal heavy and awkward in her hands. She knew she couldn't beat him. Not like this. Not with strength. The scroll's words echoed in her mind, the willing sacrifice of her heart's deepest fear. As she charged forward, her eyes locked with Alaric's. He had raised his head, his golden eyes weak, but they were fixed on her. And in them, she saw it. Not just pain, not just defeat, but a desperate, terrifying fear. For her. In that moment, she understood. The ultimate leap of faith. The sacrifice wasn't just about accepting loss. It was about trusting the bond, trusting him so completely that the fear of losing him no longer had any power over her. It was about surrendering her control to a love that was terrifying and wild and bigger than her own life. Gideon! She screamed, her voice raw. She swung the heavy iron sconce, not with the hope of winning a fight, but with the fierce, defiant cry of a woman who was finally ready to let go. Chapter 22. As she charged, the world narrowed to two points of light, the cruel, triumphant eyes of Gideon, and the faint, desperate gold of Alaric's. Her makeshift weapon felt heavy and useless. Gideon laughed, raising his sword. But she wasn't fighting him. She was fighting the fear inside her. I let go. The thought wasn't a whisper, it was a scream in her soul. She let go of the terror of losing Willow. She let go of the agony of losing her parents. She let go of the fresh, sharp fear of losing Alaric. She surrendered all of it, her entire being, to the fragile, pulsing bond between them. In that moment, a fire erupted from the mark on her wrist, a blinding torrent of silver light that shot across the chamber and slammed into Alaric.
One moment he was drowning in agony, his life fading. The next, her surrender hit him like a lightning strike. It wasn't just power, it was life itself, pure and untamed, pouring into him. The silver chains binding him shattered into dust. His wounds sealed over in the span of a breath, leaving unmarred skin behind. The pain was gone. And in its place was a power he had only ever dreamed of. The power of his line, fully unleashed. The power of his mate, joined with his own. A roar tore from his throat. A sound that was no longer just a wolf, but something more ancient, more terrifying. A king's battle cry, his bones cracked and reshaped, his body exploding into a form far larger than his normal wolf. He was a colossal beast of midnight fur and silver light, his eyes burning with the power of a thousand storms. Gideon's triumphant laugh died in his throat, replaced by a choked gasp of terror. Kaelin, the Blood Moon Alpha, froze mid-chant. They were mice before a hurricane. He moved. What followed was not a fight. It was a reckoning. Between one breath and the next, he tore through the Blood Moon warriors. They were nothing. Less than nothing. He slammed Gideon against a pillar, the traitor's life extinguished before he could even scream for the mercy he didn't deserve. Kaelin, the great rival Alpha, tried to flee, but Alaric was on him in a heartbeat, his massive jaws closing, ending the threat, the curse and the war in one final brutal act. As the last echo of the slaughter faded, he shifted back. He stood, weakened but whole, amidst the dust and ruin, his eyes finding the only thing in the universe that mattered, Sarah, his Luna, his savior. And his gaze was no longer cold but filled with a raw, fierce adoration that was as untamed as the beast within him.
Chapter 23. The silence roared in the aftermath of the storm. The chamber smelled of ozone and vanquished magic. Alaric stood before her, his chest heaving, his body bruised but whole. And his eyes. The gold was still there, but the ice was gone, replaced by a warmth that made her heart ache with a beautiful, terrifying joy. He closed the distance between them, his hands coming up to gently cup her face. His touch was not a brand of ownership now. It was a reverent, questioning caress. "Sarah," he breathed, her name hanging in the space like a prayer. She leaned into his touch, a wave of exhaustion and relief so profound it almost buckled her knees. They had survived. Soon after, what was left of Alaric's loyal warriors streamed into the chamber, their faces a mixture of awe and disbelief. With a new, quiet compassion she'd never seen, Alaric began giving orders, tending to the wounded, rallying his people. Sarah, however, felt the power still humming beneath her skin, a wild river seeking an outlet. Her gaze fell upon the stone floor, where the black, creeping tendrils of the blight had begun to invade the castle itself. As if pulled by a string, she knelt down and pressed her palm against the corrupted stone. She didn't push this time. Instead, she opened herself up, letting the power flow from her like a gentle spring. A soft, silver light spread from her hand, and where it touched, the black veins of the blight receded. Green, healthy moss bloomed in its place. And as she healed the land, she felt another change, a distant connection flaring to life. Willow. The crushing weight on her sister's health was lifting. She felt it, clear as day. The fever was breaking. The life that was returning to the soil was returning to her sister, too. In the quiet that followed, she found Rowan, wounded but alive, and healed the worst of her injuries with a touch. The fierce warrior looked at her with tears in her eyes. "My Luna," she whispered. Alaric came to her side then, wrapping a strong arm around her, holding her close. Their bond was no longer a fragile thread, but a deep, calm river, their emotions flowing freely between them. They were finally, truly, one.
Chapter 24. Weeks later, sunlight streamed through the tall windows of the castle, illuminating a hall filled not with tension, but with the low, happy murmur of a pack reborn. The blight was in full retreat across the land. The Shadowfen pack was rebuilding, stronger and more united than ever before. Because of that, hope was no longer a fragile, whispered thing. It was in the air they breathed. At the head of the council table, she sat beside Alaric. Not behind him, not below him, but beside him. His hand rested on hers, their mate marks glowing with a soft silvery light. He was still a king, powerful and decisive, but the cold isolation was gone, replaced by a warm wisdom. He listened to his counsel, but more importantly, he listened to her. They were partners in every sense of the word. A peal of laughter echoed from the courtyard below. Sarah smiled. It was Willow. Her sister had made a full and miraculous recovery. Once she was strong enough, Sarah had brought her here, to her new home. At first, Willow had been nervous, but the pack had welcomed her with a gentle curiosity, and she had blossomed, her laughter a constant, beautiful sound in the ancient halls. He watched his mate smile, and a profound sense of peace settled in his soul. For a century, he had carried the weight of his crown alone, believing the bond was a weakness that would be his undoing. But he was wrong. Surrendering control, embracing vulnerability, trusting her. It had not been his ruin. It had been his salvation. He saw Gideon's remaining loyalists working to repair the walls alongside his own warriors. He saw a fully healed Rowan teaching a laughing Willow how to identify healing herbs in the now flourishing gardens. He saw a kingdom not just healing, but becoming better, stronger, and more whole than it had ever been. All because of her.
That night, she stood with Alaric on the high balcony of their chambers, overlooking their flourishing kingdom under a canopy of brilliant stars. The air was clean and sweet, carrying the scent of pine and damp earth. His arm was a solid, comforting weight around her. She was no longer the pragmatic human who feared loss. Her heart was full, her purpose clear. She had faced her deepest fear, and found not ruin, but a love so powerful it had healed a kingdom. Her family wasn't just Willow anymore, it was this entire, wild, wonderful pack. And at its center was this man, her king, her mate. He leaned down, his lips brushing her temple. "My fierce, brave Luna," he murmured into her hair. She leaned her head against his shoulder, her hand covering his on her waist, their mate marks pulsing in unison. Her world had not been shattered that day she was taken. It had just begun. And just like that, everything was finally, perfectly, in its right place. Epilogue. 2 years later, Sarah stood on the high balcony, not as a prisoner, but as a queen. Below, the Shadowfen forest was a sea of vibrant green, the blight a forgotten nightmare. The sound of children's laughter drifted up from the courtyard, mingling with the happy shouts of a thriving pack. A small tug on her dress made her look down. A little boy with his father's molten gold eyes and her own stubborn chin grinned up at her. "Mama." Warmth enveloped her from behind as Alaric wrapped his arms around them both, his chin resting on her head. "Our kingdom," he murmured, his voice full of a deep, settled peace she had given him. "Our son." She saw Willow below, her sister's laughter bright and healthy as she watched the pups play, her human joy a welcome thread in their world. The locket around Sarah's neck was a steady warmth against her skin. She had once feared the terrifying pull of destiny, believing only in what she could control. But surrendering to the bond had not brought the ruin she feared. It had brought her everything, a home, a purpose, and a love wilder and more profound than she had ever dared to imagine. Thank you so much for watching this video. We really appreciate you spending your time with us. If you enjoyed what you saw, we've got a whole library of other videos packed with more great content, just like this, waiting for you on our channel. So, why not dive into another one right now? And hey, if you want to make sure you don't miss out on our next upload, hit that subscribe button and the notification bell. We'd love to have you join our community and see you in the next video. Thanks again.